Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Dr. Guy's Monday Night Gumbo with your host, Dr. Tanisha Guy, licensed professional counselor, and co-host Andrea Wise Brown, life strategist and licensed professional counselor, and Sean the Realist. Dr. Guy Monday Night Gumbo and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by talk show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of the show host. Dr. Guy Monday Night Gumbo is not intended to be therapy, but the sole purpose is to disseminate information, increase dialogue across ages, religious preference, gender, and sexual orientation. Don't forget to tune in every week to Dr. Guy's Monday Night Gumbo.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Dr. Guy's Monday Night Gumbo. And so today is June 8th, and tonight we're going to cover a topic that is very recent in the news. In fact, it just took place this past weekend. And so our title is for tonight's show is McKinney, Texas, Black Lives Matter. So we're going to talk a little bit about an event that took place this past weekend in a suburb of Dallas, Texas, McKinney, Texas. And so I have a guest tonight. You guys will probably remember him from a few shows back, but I would like to introduce my guest for tonight, Dr. Malik Rahim. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fine, Dr. Guy. How are you?
Good. So we are going to be joined by Sean a little later on in the show, but we're going to go right ahead and jump into our topic tonight about the McKinney pool party incident. And so for those of my listeners who have not, you know, been on Facebook or who do not live in the DFW area, let me bring you up to speed about the incident that took place this weekend. And I know you are on social media, Dr. Rahim, so you actually are abreast of this particular incident, of course, correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I am.
All right. All right. So, again, for those of you who have not heard the story yet, apparently June 5th, this Friday, there was a pool party that was in a subdivision. And I don't know, I haven't been able to really get the gist of it, if it was a adult-supervised pool party. But nonetheless, there was a pool party. Apparently they had a DJ. And because we live in this worldwide world of internet and social media, the pool party got out through social media. And according to the different articles about this event, supposedly there were kids who started to attend the pool party that were not from the community or that were not invited to the pool party. As a result of that, there was a fight or an outbreak between a mother in the community and a teenage girl, which later led to, I believe it was one initial police car who then asked for backup. Nine additional police cars followed. As a result, there were kids who were being thrown on the ground. A 14-year-old girl, an officer threw her to the ground and put his knee in her back. The same officer even pulled a gun out as some of the kids were trying to run away from the officers. So that's the short version of this particular story. If you guys have not seen the video, you can just Google McKinney, Texas pool party, and I'm sure it will pull up multiple links. So we're going to go ahead and get started on this topic. So, Dr. Rahim, what are your thoughts? Like, I know you probably saw the video sometime early this weekend, and so what was going through your mind as you watched the different video clips?
Yes. When I first saw the video, Dr. Guy, the first thing that came to my mind was nausea. I was very sick because of the fact that it's like these type of events are happening over and over again. And it's like it's just slowly getting more and more out of control. I mean, the beautiful thing is like as you watch the video, you initially from the beginning, you see the police officer in question come running into the frame, and he does a body roll like he's in like he's in warfare. And I found out he was in the Navy 10 years, but it's like being that I'm used to being in the Marine Corps, he did the body roll perfect. I got to give him points on that. He did a perfect body roll. But the interesting thing was there was no need for him to do the body roll.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is like he immediately, you know, felt that his way of taking charge of the situation was to be aggressive and to take no prisoners and to just kind of round up everybody, just kind of just intimidate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, the thing about it is this: it's like, unfortunately, I mean, it's like I've seen different things. I've seen posts on Facebook from so-called entertainers, and
mm-hmm.
one of the posts said that if they had a child, they would tell their child that they have to start learning how to quote unquote play the game and learn how to deal with the police officers. Well, the unfortunate mm-hmm. thing about that is that all of the young people that were there were teenagers. And knowing the developmental stages of teenagers, the thing is, like, when I was a teenager, I'm sure when you were a teenager, I'm sure a lot of your listeners, when they were teenagers, some probably are teenagers now. One of the beautiful things about the developmental stages of teenagers is you get to the point where you think you know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to the point where you think you know anything, anybody who has any quote-unquote authority, you kind of rebel again. Now, mm-hmm. the interesting thing is like, as I've learned this, as the story goes on, the children who were not being harassed or questioned or rounded up, none of the white children, they're all black children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, when you are standing there witnessing this type of what you would perceive as injustice and this inequitable treatment, it would bring some emotions to you. So you'll start... you know, start questioning. So, like, a lot of the young people when I'm watching the video was, like, questioning the police officers, like, why are we being rounded up? Why is this happening? My understanding is the young lady was trying to explain what was going on. I guess
mm-hmm.
the police officer didn't like the fact that she was trying to explain things, so he immediately took her to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look and you see how, you know, he manhandled her to take her to the ground, then he had the audacity to put his knees in her back. When two of her friends came to find out what was going on, he immediately drew his gun.
Mm-hmm.
Not the taser, you know, he drew his gun. So the thing is, like, it was two other police officers that came and kind of tried to, you know, calm down the situation and immediately, you know, calm down. He put his gun away and then he went back to subduing the young lady. But the thing is, like, today, as I was watching CNN, my son, he's a college student, and he was getting me to watch CNN. And as I was watching CNN, there was a young lady who came on, and she was basically saying that the officer deserves a medal.
Mm-hmm. I saw that one.
Like, yeah, and the interesting thing to me is that the systemic thing about racism is this, is like, especially white privilege, is you don't see it. And it's like, the thing is that, it's like, as you watch the video, I mean, you think in your mind, like, how can anyone not see what's going on? But see, the beautiful thing is this: with white privilege, you are trained not to see race. And even when you see race, you're trained to think that it doesn't have to do with race. So the thing is, when the young lady was saying how she felt the officer deserved the medal and all this stuff, it's like, the thing is this, a lot of them children would put into a position where they were dehumanized.
Mm-hmm.
Because the stereotypical images of them children was made out to be, they're violent, they're aggressive, they're dangerous, and they were dehumanized. And then it's like, now as I learned later on, I found out the young man who recorded the video is a white male, and he kind of explained the whole situation of that none of his white friends were being harassed, or all the black children, and I'm just appalled that these type of things are happening over and over again, and it's like there is no movement to kind of do an overhaul of the police departments on the way that they are treating people of color.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to the initial watching of the video, because like you, when I first watched the video, I saw the officer, and what was the roll call again that he did? What's that called again?
I called it the fireman roll, and it's like
okay, the
thing
fireman
about
roll.
The thing about it is, when I was in the Marine Corps, that's one of the roles that we had to learn how to do. But we usually did it when we were in basic training, and we were doing field training, that we were going to be in line of fire.
Right. So, like, I thought that he was dodging something. So I went back to watch the video, that part again, because I was thinking, I must have missed something. Like, he did the drop and roll because something was being thrown at him, or, you know, he was trying to avoid something. But when I went back to look at it, I didn't see anything there. And so I was thinking, okay, did I miss something? And so now I've seen, you know, three or four different videos, I guess, from that event, trying to kind of put bits and pieces of it together based on what they said the initial reason why the police officers were called. And when I first watched the video, I had no idea what triggered, as they're saying, the chaos. Obviously, you know, after going back and watching and reading some of the articles, supposedly the chaos didn't start with out of the neighborhood kids jumping the fence, or, you know, loud, boisterous music being played at the family pool by a DJ. But the altercation started with a teenager who supposedly was being insulted, or racial slurs were being told to her by a Caucasian adult female. And the adult female responded by hitting the adolescent female, and that triggered the fight. And the fight triggered the rest of the chaos and the madness that kind of took place after that, and the initial reason why police were called. And so as I go back and I kind of read, and I'm reading the comments that people are saying, obviously, you know, one comment was, it's irrelevant what triggered the police being called out. I'll give them that. True enough. You know, the whys are always irrelevant. Why they showed up there, okay, maybe that could be true. But as I saw the same video that you said, where there was a Caucasian woman who said that she believed the officer did everything that he was supposed to do, and that's how officers are trained, that they believe that their life is in danger, and she believes that he should receive a medal, and he did the right thing. And so when I heard her make that statement, I go back and I look at this video, and I'm reading the caption that this is a 14-year-old girl whose head is slammed on the ground. The officer's knee is in her back, and she's 14.
Right.
And I don't have a response to that. Like, I don't know what all the other chaos meant or why it started, but I know that I'm watching an adult man who looks like he is putting all of his weight on a 14-year-old unarmed, by the way, in a two-piece bikini, slams her head down onto the ground, and puts his knee into her back. How do we explain that was appropriate force of, or that was appropriate behavior by a police officer?
Well, I think it's very relevant. A couple of things. First, when you mentioned the body roll, when you notice the body roll initially, you notice he does it, and then a couple of seconds later, other police officers run by, and they don't do the body roll. So it's obvious that there was something that, you know, either he accidentally tripped, he wanted to, you know, play it off. I don't know. I think it's very important on why they were called. The reason I say it's important on why it was called is because the thing is, when you get a call that officers are needed in a situation, that would kind of give me the impression, I'm not a police officer, but that would kind of give me the impression on the amount of adrenaline that is going through the person, right? Because, see, the thing is this, immediately when this adrenaline is going through the person, you get the fight or flight response. So when this type of adrenaline is going on, when if depending on what type of call it was, we kind of initiate on what kind of threat initially the officers will feel going in. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I noticed is all the other police officers that were there, he was the only one that initially came in with his baton drawn. None of the police officers had their baton drawn, their weapons drawn, nothing. He was the only one initially. Usually from talking to individuals who are police officers, usually when you have a call like that, the first thing is to go and find the person who initially made the call.
Mm-hmm.
Then once you find a person who initially made the call, you interview them, and then you start trying to gather around any type of witnesses on the incidents that's happening. I do not know if it was the fight was actually going on when he initially arrived, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, the thing about it is
doesn't look like it.
The next thing is breakdown is this, is him seeing all the black teens as immediate threats, and none of the white teens, none of the Hispanic teens, none of the teens of North African or Middle Eastern descent. He immediately saw all the black teens as a threat. So he started gathering around and started making sure the black teens either evacuated their situation or was immediately put in a submissive stance of either sitting or lying on the ground. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then the situation with the young lady. I've seen the young lady on video, and, you know, I wasn't there. And of course, you know, when you're in the situation and your adrenaline's running and you have that the fight or flight situation going
on, it could be a whole lot
of different situations. But it's like she did not appear to me to be an immediate threat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I think he over-responded by immediately grabbing her after it looked like he was telling her to move along. And when she was still standing there talking with a group of her friends, apparently she said something that he did not like. So he grabbed her and immediately threw her to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can hear her crying for her mom. Somebody
mm-hmm.
to hear her mom. That's when he started becoming more aggressive with her. Now,
mm-hmm.
the next troubling thing I have is not only did, because the little girl is quite smallish. The little girl was, she looked, when I first saw her, when they were saying 14.
Young lady.
When she was saying 14, I was like, they're stretched. I didn't really think that girl was 14. Because she looked quite young. But the thing about it is this. For him, when the young men came, for him to immediately pull his weapon and pointed at the young men, I immediately started getting fearful that, oh, this is about to really get out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is, like, you know, from initially watching the video, when I first initially started watching the video, and the thing that I'm scared of is this, being that both of us are mental health professionals, mm-hmm. is the type of trauma that happened during that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Not only the trauma the young lady had, the trauma the two young men had from having the guns pulled on them, the trauma that everyone had around the situation, the trauma the police officer must have been going through when he did that. Right? Because
mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if, you know, I'm not trying to give him excuses or anything like that because I haven't had a chance to interview him or do a mental health assessment on him or anything like that. But seeing that he's been in the military for 10 years, and according to what I looked at, if it's accurate, he was in the military for the 10 years during the Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if he's suffering from some type of PTSD. And the thing is like there's a lot of veterans that's going around that have undiagnosed PTSD issues.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, one of the first things that they do is join our police force because that's the easiest track for them to get into. Either the police force or some government agency like the post office or something like that. But I'm more worried about the police force because of the fact the amount of authority that we give law enforcement officers. So, so with the fact that I don't know if anyone's really, you know, discussing the amount of trauma that might be going on all the way around, and then unfortunately the amount of trauma that we're suffering by constantly watching this video. Because it's bringing up a lot of, it's like a lot of times when I'm talking to people, it's bringing up a lot of unconscious things that happened to people sometimes in the past that they weren't even aware of.
Mm-hmm.
I know of a young lady who I was talking to earlier who actually cried, literally cried, when she, you know, when she watched the video, because she remembered when she was young, she had situations similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the thing about it is, like, I think there's a lot of untreated trauma that's going around, especially with this situation alone. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. you're about to say something.
I think one of the young male who recorded it, I think they said his name was Brandon Brooks. Like, this particular guy, when they interviewed him, and they asked him, have you ever seen anything quite like this before? And he said, absolutely not. Like, he was traumatized. And remember, he was the witness. He was the one that was recording it. And so I think that you are right, that one of the entities that we have not talked about is how impacted the individuals are going to be as it relates to the trauma. But like any traumatic event, while you're in it, people don't know that this is a traumatic event. And so the response that comes after that typically is that anger or that frustration. And then after, you know, a while, then that's when it sits in that, oh, my goodness, that was a traumatic experience for me. And as a result, maybe I'm having some anxiety, I'm having difficulty sleeping. It could be all of those things that take place. And so I'm glad that you brought that up. I do want to go to the phone lines because we do have a caller, but I also want to put this out there. So for anyone who's listening tonight, and I do know that I have some listeners that are in law enforcement or your loved ones are in law enforcement, I really would like to speak to someone who's in law enforcement because I want to hear their thoughts and ideas about what took place, because I never wanted to seem like we're just that we're dragging for police officers, because I don't think that all police officers are bad. Don't get me wrong, and I've said this on the show before. But I do believe that there's something that's excessive force that I believe has taken place in this video. So if you are in law enforcement and you're listening tonight, or you're listening and you have someone who is in law enforcement, family member, loved one, have them give us a call, because definitely want to hear what their thoughts are on the show tonight. So we are going to go to the phone lines at 312. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling in just because my friend Malik is on the air tonight, and I definitely wanted to show some support for him. But just in watching the video, what kind of, you know, really kind of messed me up with the fact that all these black kids are being told to sit down, go away, and then you have this white kid videotaping, and no one's told him anything. Like, I didn't catch it from the beginning, the show from the beginning, so I don't know if this part was even discussed. But the fact that he is walking around with a video camera, pretty much like he got free range of the whole place, and all these kids are being told, you know, you have to go over here, you have to go over there. This young girl who's sitting on the ground, first being drugged to the ground by the police, and after that he picks her up and slams her to the ground again, and then you have this young man who is just walking around like he's pretty much is a police officer himself. No one is saying, you get across the street, do you have a seat or anything like that? And it just shows, you know, how unfortunately so many of our people have to, our young people have to live in this society,
mm-hmm.
with these double standards and things.
You're absolutely correct. The gentleman that was recording it, Brandon, if you want to hear his interview about his video, you can find it on News 6. And he actually said that very thing, that while he was recording it, that the officers kind of just bypassed him and overlooked him. And there was other, he said there was one other Caucasian kid and everybody else was African American. But they just walked past them or ran past them and went to go get one of the African American kids to kind of restrain them. And he said no one touched them or said anything. So the guy that interviewing him said, do you think that this was racially, that these kids were racially profiled? And the guy said, absolutely. And he was present. And this is a Caucasian kid that is saying, absolutely. I believe that there was some racial tension behind why the African-American kids were, again, told to put your head down. And again, I really want to know from someone who's in law enforcement, is that protocol that you're supposed to tell people to put their head in the ground and then slam it in the dirt?
They definitely do have, just knowing from working with law enforcement, I'm not a police officer, but I have worked with police officers, they definitely do, you know, have that whole brothers in blue, and they will stand up with each other and say, oh, no, he followed protocol. I mean, you have some police officers who might, you know, on the side say, no, what he did was wrong, but you definitely do have a lot of them who will stand by what he said. I mean, after the incident with, the kid in Ferguson, when he got killed, I remember a police officer friend of mine was saying, you know, the police officer did what he needed to do. I mean, it's just that they will stand by each other through and through and think that what they're doing is right, even if it's wrong.
Okay, so you saw the video, one of the same videos that myself and then Dr. Raheem saw. At any point, because several of the comments that were made was officers have a right to protect themselves if they are in fear for their lives. Did you see any part of the video that looked like any of the officers were in danger?
I wouldn't even be in danger, to be honest with you, especially from that young girl. I mean, she's 14, she's a small girl, she's got on a bikini. Like, I seriously feel like if I had to fight her, I could beat her up. So I would feel like I was in fear for my life if she was standing up hollering at me. Like, she wasn't even hollering, she was just saying, you know, he just wanted her to go across the street and she wasn't listening. I don't think at any point anyone there was a serious threat. These are just kids who were at a pool party. They were out shooting dice in the alley with guns, their pants sagged. They were at a pool party. I mean, these kids are not a danger to anyone. I would like to think that they're not a danger to anyone. I would like to think that when I see a young group of black kids hanging out, that they are not out just being vigilantes or out in the streets just doing whatever. I would like to think that they're out enjoying themselves and being good kids. I don't think any of these kids, the police officer, should have had a fear for their lives. I mean, if they have a fear for a 14-year-old, then it's time to get off the force.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Well, thank you so much for tuning in tonight, and thank you so much for your comment, and hopefully you'll continue to listen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We are going to go ahead and bring Mr. Sean the Realist on. Hey, Sean.
What's going on, man? I'm sorry I missed y'all. I'm out here getting this money. A little late, but I'm with you now.
Okay. So, Sean, as you know, tonight we are talking about the McKinney, Texas pool party incident that took place. And if it was racially heated or if it was just, and again, reading multiple posts, there are individuals that are residents of the McKinney area that made reference to, and these are, you know, there's, as they say, there's always two sides to every story. And so as one story reads, the kids that were attending this pool party were local residents of the McKinney area. And even the gentleman who recorded the video said that it is his belief that because there were so many African-American kids there at the same time, they did not believe that they were from the community. But he made reference and said, these are just kids from the community. As others made posts about it, they called these kids thugs and hooligans and said that they were jumping the fence and creating chaos in the neighborhood. What are you all thoughts about that, you guys, when one group of people are saying these are thugs and hooligans because they're African-American kids and we don't really know what took place, whether they were jumping fences or, you know, causing fights or whatever the case may be. And another group, the kid who recorded the video said, These kids weren't doing any of that, and these were just local neighborhood kids. What's your response to that? Like, do we still think that this had no racial intent behind it? What the outcome turned out to be?
Well, that question for me is a good Dr. Malik. You know, I have a lot of respect for him, and, you know, this seems to be more his wheelhouse than mine, but, you know, I can tiptoe over here a little bit.
Well, since you're just joining us, what are your thoughts on it, Sean?
Well, actually, I have some experience in that area. You know, I'm, 10 toes down everywhere, and I am in the Dallas area, so I get around a little bit. So, you know, McKinney is a interesting neighborhood. I have a friend whose mother moved there, and, you know, they rushed when they were moving, so they didn't do a very good job packing, and so there were a lot of things that they had in trash bags. And her mother... you know, is diabetic and has some other conditions. So, you know, as they were moving in, one of the neighbors contacted the police with a tip that there was someone moving in the neighborhood that might have been manufacturing or selling drugs because they had an enormous amount of trash bags and medical supplies. So, you know, I think that that's just that area.
Right.
You know, the police... by and large part, they are protecting their constituents, which is the people that you're referencing. You know, if they feel as though that they're hooligans and thugs, then that's their perception is that reality. So, you know, having been around police officers and worked in a environment of security at some point in my life, that, you know, I do understand, you know, there's always going to be one person that you kind of have to monitor that can make things turn left really quick, and I just saw that one guy, you know, running around, cutting flips, doing whatever he was doing. So in his mind, this might have been World War III. You know, this might have been the most black people he ever been around in his life. He don't know what to do. He's losing his mind. So, you know, I have been in situations, and it's very difficult for you to say that, you know, he was not in fear of his life because you're not physically there. Like, when you're physically there and there are 40 to 50 people running around, it feels a lot different from having that first-person camera angle. There's a different energy. So, you know, whereas I'm not condoning what he did, I don't think it's right, but I think a lot of it has to do with his lack of training more so than anything else.
Okay. I guess I'm... By no means do I ever want to come off as I think that, you know, these cops are just all racist officers. I don't believe that. But when I look at the video, I find it very difficult to believe that there was no other way that this officer could have handled this 14-year-old unarmed, and I repeat by saying unarmed adolescent girl. And yes, I'll go with you when you say, Sean, that maybe he was threatened, maybe he felt intimidated or fear for his life because there were multiple, you know, adolescents running around simultaneously here and there. And, okay, maybe that could have been a anxiety-provoking or even fearful situation. But there were 9 other police officers called for backup, and in the event of that taking place,
Dr. Gott, don't want to answer the question. Let me answer the question, okay?
Oh, I've answered the question. You may not like to answer it. You know, don't do
it. Well, no, you really didn't answer the question. Yes, race was a contributing factor in the whole ordeal.
It was his lack of training. I didn't say it was race. I said it was a lack of training.
The question was,
it was a lack of training. So that
right,
was.
So you
no.
don't think? So you still answer is no.
So
the answer
so
is
if
no.
If I did not say yes, then it's no.
Okay. The issue is that unfortunately, we have too many people skirting around the elephant in the room, okay? When you have a group of teenagers of the whole spectrum of the human race, and what I mean by that, black, brown, white, they're all there, So you had different ethnicities. You had Latino, you had black, you had white, you had Middle Eastern. You had all there. You had different genders, male and female. Thing about it is this, you have the people saying that only people who were harassed during this whole incident were the black team. Now, you can always say, well, the black team saying that, that's their perspective. The young man who took the video is white. He's a white team. He, if you watch the video, he's able to walk around just like he's doing a training video. No one confronted him. No one asked him to stop or to step away. He's able to walk and get as close as he needs to get to be able to video this. At no time did he say that he noticed any of his white friends or any of his white colleagues or anyone else who was not black being told to leave the area or to sit down. When the officer came, he immediately assumed that all the black teams, since there were so many, did not belong there. There's a reason he did not believe that the black teams did not belong there. Okay? So the thing about it is this. The one of the reasons that the phone call was made was because, from what I heard, there's been a whole lot of different reasons thrown around for why the calls were made out. But one of the things I've heard was that they was fearful with so many black teens there. So the thing about it is this. For me to hear someone say that race was not an issue is trying to curtail to be politically correct. You got to deal with the elephant in the room.
Well, it's not an elephant in the room because if it was, then it would have been more than him. That's why I'm saying it's a training issue, because if it was a racial issue, it would have been.
All it takes is one person.
It would have been more than that.
One person.
What I'm saying is that he may not have been aware
of
black people that lived in the neighborhood. He was not. It seemed that he was the only person that was not aware of the amount of black people that live in that neighborhood. So to me, that speaks not to him being racist. He can be ignorant, but it's because he didn't know the black people were supposed to be there. So that's to me why he's targeted the black people.
Right, but Sean, if you listen to what was said, all the police officers confronted the black children, not just him. He was the one caught on video going overboard and using excessive force. But the young man clearly said that all the black children were confronted by the police. No white children. No Latino children. So that means that your whole entire police force needs training. What do you need training on? You need training on sensitivity. You need an education on dealing with people. You need training on this. So the thing about it is this. You don't need training. You don't need training. You don't need training as far as, proper police procedures, because he did a beautiful body fireman role as he was running in. He did a beautiful one. And being an ex-Marine, I'm telling you, it was picture perfect. But he was the only one that did it. But all the police officers, according to the young man and other witnesses, only spoke to the black team. So the thing about it is, it wasn't just him.
So I think in order for us to put all this in context, we need the direction that the dispatch gave to the police officers. What was the call?
Well,
is anybody aware of what the call was?
Yes, the original call, which if you go back in, there's a video that has been posted. The original incident, or what caused the call, a Caucasian woman was supposedly making racial comments to an adolescent female. And she slapped the adolescent female, which led to a physical altercation. So in the video, you see this adult woman fighting this adolescent, and it looks like there are other people who have now gotten involved to try to break it up. Potentially, there's another Caucasian woman. There's some other kids. That was the initial call, supposedly, was to break up the fight. They said fights broke out. that was the only fight that took place. So when they got there, obviously, as you can see on the other video, there's no Caucasian woman fighting an adolescent girl, and the police are there. So this must have taken place beforehand. So by the time the police got there, that fight had ended. But now you have all of these kids that are still there, and they're dispersing. And the kid who videotaped it, Brandon, he stated by the time the police got there, him and his other friend were the only Caucasian kids there. So apparently these other kids that were not Caucasian, I mean that were not African American, they left. So now you're left with a whole bunch of African American kids who are now running and trying to figure out what's going on. Again, when I first watched the video, And hearing both of you make your statement, it brought up to mind is that I was trying to figure out why the officer didn't tell the person to stop recording it. And I thought, well, this person isn't, like, hiding behind a bush or a tree or anything. So whoever is doing this recording is right out in the open. But I couldn't understand why the police officer didn't even yell one time, stop recording, or move out the way, or go somewhere. Like, I didn't hear that in the video. And so now it makes sense, as this 15-year-old who recorded it says, the officers overlooked him and his other Caucasian friends. Like, they were just there. So how do you speak to that? Like, is that poor training that, again, this kid, now if he was an African-American kid video recording that incident, he would have probably been on the ground with his head slammed in the dirt, just like the other African-American kids. So how is that not an example that there had to be something that was racial about that incident?
I can only speak for what my experience has been. I've been, like I said, I've worked at Oil Clubs. I worked at Clark Atlanta for a little while in security with the police officers. And whenever there is a large group of people, and I know you said, well, hey, there were 9 police. I don't care about the other 8. What I'm worried about is if I'm getting messed up. So safety first. You know, like when Mayweather punched the boy out, hey, protect yourself at all times. It's a boxing match. And that's the same thing I'm trying to convey. So from my experience, I do understand what you're saying, but until you're physically there with 40 people, 10 of them running around, you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what's going on. It's a different feeling. It's easier than Monday morning quarterback, and that's all I'm saying. Now, as it relates to the young lady, I got some other issues with him. You know, he might just want to put his hands on a little young girl, you know. But from my perspective, when I've been around and somebody's pulled a knife out when there was a gunfight, you know, it's not racial. I'm just trying to be safe. You know, whether it's 5 or 15.
Right now, we're adding weapons that wasn't even there.
You don't know what was there because you wasn't there.
No, because
there might have been something in the bushes.
Let me finish as well, Doctor.
We can do this all day. I don't quit.
Okay.
If you will stop interrupting me, I will give you your turn.
I did not interrupt you. You have stopped. The thing about
I have not stopped. You interrupted me.
At the beginning,
we can do this all day.
It is only an hour show. If you guys go back and forth for the next 15 minutes, I'll never hear what both of you all have to say.
That is correct, Dr. Guy. So what I said was, you do not know what was there, and when you go into a situation, you cannot say what was in the bushes, what was in a car. We have to treat every situation when you're dealing with public safety and people as there can be something else. Continue, Doc.
Okay. If you would listen at the beginning, I said when you have your adrenaline going for fight or for flight, your adrenaline makes you do things that sitting back here now, we wouldn't know what was going on. There was no report of any weapons of any kind except the police officer who drew his gun on the 2 young men. There was no other report of a knife, a gun, or anything. Now, what I am clearly saying is this. It's obvious that the only young people that were pulled to the side, questioned, stopped, or harassed were black. Cut and simple. That's a fact. So you can sit up here and talk about 40 people running around and all this stuff and adrenaline flowing, and you wanna look out for, you know, yourself, protect yourself at all times. What I'm saying is this. While you say you want to protect yourself at all times, you got to understand the unconscious, stereotypical things that you have internalized about different groups of people. So if you have internalized by black people are being dangerous, obnoxious, threatening, then, of course, those are the individuals you're going to focus on first and utmost. And if those are the people that you're going to focus in first and utmost because of your unconscious behavior, then, of course, there are racial overturns to it. Period, cut and dry. If he had the same thought pattern as you, is protect yourself at all times, Sean, it's obvious the only people he saw there as threatening are black.
Well, you can ask Dr. Guy, if there's too many black people, I don't want to go, so I'm racist.
Okay.
I'm sorry?
On that note.
Yeah, you can ask Dr. Guy, we'll go places, and if there are too many black people there, I don't want to go, so I guess you can call me a racist, too.
It's not a racist, I will call you, Sean. Racist is not the term I would use for you, Sean.
You can use whatever term you like.
He just may be more acculturated. On that note, I'm going to go to the phone line, and we're going to bring in Jim Beckwell and see what he has to say to chime in for our topic tonight. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing? This is G. Lewis calling in from California.
Hey.
Hey, I wanted to cover a couple. Hello?
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if you could hear it.
Okay, I wanted to cover a couple of things that I've, you know, because I've been listening, and I wanted to cover a couple of issues or discrepancies.
Go right ahead.
Okay. Now, I heard the one gentleman that said, you know, he worked in security. He has that kind of background. I also have a similar background, with law enforcement. And he is right, you know, when it comes to those kind of situations where you have that many people around you. First thing you're taught is to make sure that you come home alive. But here's one of the discrepancies when we're talking about reactionary versus intentional, okay? There was a white gentleman who was around the cop the whole time. He even intervened and separated individuals. He put his hands, he was physically involved in the altercation and separating individuals. Yet that cop at no point never stopped him, never warned him, never removed him. He even was standing behind the cop when the cop had kneeled down on the little girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not once. If I'm in fear for my safety, I don't want anybody around me, not just people who look a certain way, which obviously this circumstance was. You know, and we talk about, you know, we talk about training for the cops, or we talk about, you know, different things to solve this problem. Here's my one big issue when it comes to all of these youth that have gone across the airwaves, and, you know, when it comes to law enforcement, is I always hear the rebuttal that 99% of cops are good and they're doing their job and they're doing what they're supposed to do. Well, part of that job is protecting and serving the public, right? Part of that is, you know, preventing a criminal from engaging in criminal action. So this officer that was involved has already been, you know, he's given time on the beach, which means they're going to investigate this issue, so he's no longer at work. No cop mm-hmm. involved themselves in the situation to say, hey, maybe you need to go to the car, because in a situation like this, you always have several cops. One is always in the rear taking perspective and documenting everything, because they're going to have to report all of this stuff later on. why couldn't somebody intervene to see that, okay, this is out of control, obviously, with this guy. So let's remove him and put him to the back. Nobody intervened. If we look at all of these issues that have happened, you know, Tamir Rice, you look at, you know, Mike Brown, you look at all of these issues, there wasn't a cop that said, hey, you're a little out of control. You go back here and we got this. So when we talk about training versus perspective, this is a perspective issue. It's not necessarily a training issue because perspective said that whatever this officer was feeling, whatever he felt, whatever he thought, was the reality for every cop in the area. They all rallied and reacted based on what his perspective was instead of their own individual's perspective, which is what you're supposed to do as an officer.
I totally agree. You did make some excellent points. You know, mm-hmm. I can tell you have been in those situations as well. But I still kind of feel like, you know, after all of the components of why that gentleman led the rally, because, you know, if you're in a situation, sometimes I just may not be getting along with Dr. Malik, and we might have a problem, but you might be able to talk to him and resolve the situation. And that's why I felt like it was a lack of procedure, protocol, and training.
And I understand your point. And he had two stripes. So when you look at his stripes, he was obviously a training officer. That's his job, is to train other officers. However, your job as a law enforcement officer, when you take that oath, is to protect and serve the public from any and everybody. If the one doctor said he was in the Marines. Part of your oath when you take the Marines is to defend the Constitution and the country from enemies, foreign and domestic, which means I might have to protect my country from my buddy. Same thing when it comes to law enforcement, which is a paramilitary organization. You cannot allow anything to happen on your watch that is illegal, immoral, or against the public. And this was allowed to happen. Therefore, we cannot say it's a training issue. We have to say it's a perspective issue. Not to mention the fact that he allowed an undeputized member to get physically involved in the altercation without removing this individual from the altercation, which means he felt safe with this individual based on his complexion and his, you know, obviously he wasn't black, and he allowed him to get involved. These are the facts that we have to look at when we have to decide whether it is racial or not racial.
Again, that is a valid point. We watched the video, you know, there's several posts where they're asking, who is this large Caucasian man? Why is he there? What is he doing? What is his role? And yet he's there. And not once do we see any officer ask him to move. Do they yell at him? Do they scream at him? He's consistently there. And I'm not saying it was all of the officers at this event on this pool party, you guys, by no means, because I'm sure we're all watching the same video. There was this that one particular officer who was just in full bloom. And if the question was, and I'll ask you guys again as we get ready to close out the show, do you guys think that his behavior was racially motivated? Based on what you saw, obviously none of us was there, so we're on liquors, but based on what you saw, last statement of the night, do you believe that it was racially motivated? And if so, what do we do about that? Like, I'm just imagining if I had a teenage child, let me imagine that was my daughter on the ground, that an officer put his knee in her back, you know, pushed her head down in the ground more than one time, how I would respond as a parent. Like, what do you do with that? So if you're saying, yes, I do believe this is racially motivated, now what? What do you teach your kids? What should you be telling your kids moving forward? If you say it wasn't, okay, then what is the protocol as we move forward? And I'm asking that to all three of you gentlemen as we close out the show tonight.
Well, I mean, obviously your guests, they need to go last, so I'll chime in quickly, as quick as I can, so they can get in. Yes, okay. It was racially motivated. And what do we do? One of the focuses that I don't think that we have from the African-American community is based on the recruiting techniques of law enforcement. why do you have a law enforcement that does not represent the community in which it serves the public? We need to focus on making sure that we have as much diversity as possible in law enforcement so that we can have understanding of different circumstances when these situations meet. We also need law enforcement to have the guts to live up to their oath and do their job. That's me.
Thanks, C. Lewis. All right, Dr. Raheem.
Yes, I think it was racially motivated. I halfway agree with the young man as far as having the officers that look like you. I don't want to make it to where it's like just because you're black you're going to have a non-self-hatred role toward other people. So it's like when you look at the incident that happened in, I believe it was South Carolina, where the officer shot the man run away 8 times, and the black officer kept claiming he helped him cover it up. So, like, the thing is, I would go into not only just recruiting, but the training. Part of the hiring process of police officers is a psychological exam. I would really like to take a look at that psychological exam, look and see what is it that they're truly trying to measure. Okay, that would be my first step. The second step would be that I would really look into the possibility of racial biases in psychological and gender bias, and also possibly sexual orientation biases, because while Black Lives Matter and this incident is a horrific incident that happened, you find these types of things happen over and over in the with marginalized communities over and over again with law enforcement. So like things like that need to be really taken into account into just not only the training, but in the recruitment. Actually look and see what the psychological exams really assess and start making more assessments to dealing with cultural diversity and competency when you're hiring these people, because there's been a report by the Department of Justice that a lot of people who are in these white supremacy groups are joining police departments. So that's one of the things you really got to look at. And just because a person might look like you don't mean that they have an affiliation with the community.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Raheem. And last but not least, Sean, what are your closing remarks for tonight?
Well, I definitely do. I'm not naive that there is racism, and I do believe one of the things that Thurgood Marshall said was that, you know, previously the Klan wore hoods, now they wear badges. So, you know, I know that there is that element there, but I still think it relates more to the training. We all have our biases, whether, you know, it be racial, men, women, gay, lesbian, but you have to, when you serve the public, be aware of those other communities. And I think in this instance, it's just because of the lack of awareness that they were a significant, there's a significant portion of African-Americans that live in McKinney. That's not something that's really known. Recently, I did see, and I'm not sure if you all saw this, a Caucasian gentleman who walked through the Atlanta airport with a loaded AR-15 with a 100-round drum on him. It's legal. You know, they did follow him but and take his picture, but I'm, you know, not naive that if that was a black man, I'm sure he would have been detained and probably assaulted as well. So, you know, I think this is the portion of society that you and the good Dr. Raheem reign supreme in, and I do think there is an opportunity for training to take place, and perhaps this book can take the place of his angry black woman syndrome. I think that the police training might be a little bit more needed at this time than the angry black woman syndrome.
Both of them are needed and effective because the angry black woman syndrome is real. It's real. So, as always, thank you, Dr. Malik Raheem, for joining us tonight. Sean the Realist, thank you so much. G. Lewis, thank you for calling in with your comments. Our other caller, Olive, I believe she was out of Chicago. And we did have some more hands up tonight, but we did not get a chance to address your question, so I do apologize. Make sure you guys tune in next week for another episode of Dr. Guy's Monday Night Gumbo. Everyone, have a safe, blessed week. Don't forget to Facebook it, tweet it, pass it on. Everybody, have a good night.
Good night,
everybody.